Jim had a well-developed sense of direction, but Buckhart knew it was not infallible. He remembered the time when Jim had slipped away from camp while everyone else was sleeping in the heat of noon. Jim had seen a small herd of gemsbok on the horizon, and as they were short of meat, he'd ridden after them. 3 days later, Buckhart had found him wandering in circles through the trackless hills, leading a lame horse and half-crazed with thirst. Jim hated to be reminded of that episode, and before they parted at Majuba, he had listened with full attention while Buckhart gave him detailed directions on how to find his way through the mountains, following the well-defined game trails used for centuries past by the elephant and eland herds. One of these would lead him to a ford on the Kharip River, where it debouched onto the plains at the frontier where the wilderness began. From that point, the hill of the Baboon's Head stood out clearly on the horizon to the east. Buckhart could rely on Jim to follow those directions accurately. So he had a clear picture in his mind of where Jim might be now and what route he must take to intercept him. Buckhart cut through the foothills and was well out to the north before he turned back into the main range and went up between tall, amber-coloured cliffs into the high valleys. On the fifth day after leaving High Weald, he cut their sign. With 2 steel-shod horses and 6 heavily laden mules, they had left a well-trodden spoor. Before noon, he had caught up with Jim's party. He did not announce himself, but instead circled out ahead of them to wait beside the path they must follow. Buckhart watched Jim coming down the path at the head of the file. As Drumfire came level with his hiding place, he popped up from behind his boulder like the Ajini from the lamp, and shouted shrilly, "I see you, Samoya!" Drumfire was so startled that he shied wildly. Jim, also taken by surprise, was thrown onto his neck, and Buckhart shrieked with laughter at the joke. Jim recovered his balance instantly and rode after him as Buckhart darted away down the game path, still hooting with laughter. Jim snatched off his hat, leaned out of the saddle, and slapped him with it around the head and shoulders. "You horrible little man! You're so small, so tiny, so minute that I did not even see you!" These insults sent Buckhart into such paroxysms of mirth that he fell and rolled on the earth. When Buckhart had recovered sufficiently to stand up again, Jim looked him over carefully while they greeted each other with a little more formality. Now it was apparent how finely drawn Buckhart was. Even though his tribe were famous for their fortitude and endurance, over the past week Buckhart had run over 100 leagues through mountainous terrain without allowing himself time to eat or drink adequately, or to sleep for more than a few hours. Instead of being golden and glossy, his skin was as grey and dusty as the ashes of last night's campfire. His head looked like a skull, and his gaunt cheekbones stood proud. His eyes had sunk deeply into their sockets. A bushman's buttocks are like the camel's hump. When he is well fed and rested, they are majestic and sway independently as he walks. Buckhart's backside had collapsed into folds of loose skin that dangled out of the back of his kilt. His legs and arms were as thin as the limbs of a praying mantis. "Zama," Jim called as he brought up the string of mules, "unload one of the chugga bags." When Buckhart started to make his report, Jim silenced him. "Eat and drink first," he ordered, "and then sleep. We can talk later." Zama dragged up one of the leather bags filled with chugga made from the eland meat. The salted strips had been half-dried in the sun, then packed so tightly into the bag that the air and the flies could not get to them. The first African travellers had probably taken the idea from the pemmican of the North American Indians. Treated like this, the meat would not putrefy, but keep indefinitely. It retained much of its moisture, and though the taste was high and gamey, the salt disguised the tang of rot. It was a taste that, in circumstances of need, could be readily acquired. Buckhart sat in the shade by the mountain stream, and with a heap of the black chugga sticks in front of him began to eat. After Louisa had bathed in one of the pools further downstream, she came to sit beside Jim, and they watched Buckhart eat. After a while, she asked, "How much more can he take in?" "He is only now starting to get the taste for it," Jim said. Much later, she said, "Look at his stomach. It's beginning to swell." Buckhart stood up and went to kneel at the pool. "He has finished," Louisa said. I thought he would go on until he burst. No, Jim shook his head. He just needs to wash it down to make room for the next course. Bacat returned from the pool, water dripping from his chin, and fell on the pile of chugga with undiminished appetite. Louisa clapped her hands and laughed with amazement. He is so tiny. It does not seem possible. He is never going to stop. But at last he did. With an apparent effort, he forced down one last mouthful. Then he sat cross-legged and glassy-eyed and hiccuped loudly. He looks as though he's 8 months along with child, Jim pointed out his bulging stomach. Louisa blushed at such an intimate and improper reference, but she could not hold back her smile. It was an apt description. Bacat smiled at her, then collapsed sideways, curled himself into a ball, and began to snore. In the morning his cheeks had filled out miraculously, and his buttocks, although not yet restored to their former grandeur, showed a distinct bulge under his kilt. He set upon a breakfast of chugga with renewed gusto, and thus fortified, was ready to make his report to Jim. Jim listened mostly in silence. When Bacat told him of discovering the evidence that Thea had followed them into the mountains, that he would certainly bring Kayser to Majuba, that they would follow their spoor from there, Jim looked worried. But then Bacat gave him his father's message of love and support. The dark clouds around Jim seemed to lift, and his face lit with the familiar smile. When Bacat had finished, they were both silent for a while. Then Jim stood up and went down to the pool. He sat on a rotten tree stump and brooded heavily. He broke off a lump of rotten bark, picked out the white wood maggots he had exposed, and flicked them into the water. A large yellow fish rose to the surface, and in a swirl of water gobbled them down. At last he came back to where Bacat waited patiently and squatted facing him. "We cannot go on to the Charip with Kayser following us. We will lead him straight to my father and the wagons." Bacat nodded. "We must lead him away and throw him off the spoor." "You have wisdom and understanding far beyond your tender years, Somoya." Jim picked up the sarcasm in his voice. He leaned across and gave Bacat an affectionate cuff. "Tell me then, Prince of the Polecat Clan of the San, what must we do?"